This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Jim Bynne.
Joy.
Julia Palmer.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Joy, you just mentioned you sort of dropped into the conversation that you were adopted.
Yes, I was adopted out at 6 years of age, which is probably one of my earliest recalls of my life. And
is there a reason for that?
Well, my mother was not a child. She was actually 26 when she had me. Mm-hmm. So she... I try to understand. She ended up marrying a widower who already had children, and so she was housekeeping for him, as I presume I was in part of it. I don't understand. And
but you were with your mother for the first 6 years of your life?
Yes. And then she adopted me out to her twin sister.
Ah, it's not like one of those Maori...
No, not at all. And but I remember sitting with Mum, my adopted Mum, and continually writing to my mother and trying to understand why she'd given me away. But so there was some, I guess I went through rejection and I was, I think, a bit of a rat bag, but... Yeah.
Did you see your mother very often then? If she
not a lot, because Mum and Dad had a farm. This is where I was born in Nelson.
Now hang on, Mum is your adopted mum, and your mother is your actual
Betty.
Mother.
I'll call her Betty. Okay. My real mother was Betty, and so she lived in Nelson, and Mum and Dad had a farm in Takaka, so we were basically over there. So no, I didn't see a lot of her, but I knew who she was, and. And it was never, ever talked about me being adopted. Never, ever talked about. But I obviously must have gone to school and said that I was adopted, because this particular day, I was helping Mum in the garden or something, and she said to me, "How do you know you're adopted?" And I said, "Well, of course I know I was adopted. I remember." Of course you remember at six. And she said, "Oh, we always wanted to bring you up as our own." So, and she was a really special lady, yeah.
You had any step siblings?
Yes. My mother had another three after me when she was married to this widower. And so they were basically brought up as my cousins. And I sort of knew them, but over the years they've come out and sort of eyed me up and down and then run away again. So
you mean when you were young or...
recent years, yeah. I suppose. But then they've not really... Because we weren't brought up together.
Yes, yeah.
You're not siblings. So you are siblings, yeah. But you're not.
And your adopted parents, did they have other children?
Yes, they also had another adopted child. When I went into the family, she would have been 12, because she had been 6 when she'd gone into the family also. And so she was 12. And so we weren't close, because when I come in, that's Madam.
I was just going to say this. Oh, yes. For anyone listening, the squeaking is a dog playing with its toys.
Oh, yes. She's wanting attention.
Okay.
And, yes, so, but we weren't close, but we considered we were sisters.
Okay.
So so we always were in contact with each other, and just recently, I always visited her when we went to Nelson, and she's just recently died. So no, life with Mum was lovely. Dad was a different story. he was a very hard man, but I won't complain too much.
Okay.
Because, and they struggled. They really struggled on the farm.
I was going to say, did you feel that you were in a they could care for you better than your mother could, or your actual mother?
Oh, I absolutely had a much better life. Betty, my real mother, was a very hard woman, and when we would go to Nelson, Mum would always insist that she always tried to explain to me, I want you to have that contact with your mother. Well, I used to go home to Mum and say, look, I might as well be the dog next door walking in, because she really doesn't worry about me, or never ever asked about my children or my you know, her grandchildren or anything like that.
Not but these were twin sisters. Well, so were they close?
Oh, Mum did all that. Mum would ring her every day. Betty would never ever ring Mum. Never all her life, I don't think.
Okay.
Mum was always the one that was trying to would go and visit her, as Betty would never visit Mum. She was always the, isn't that true, Jim? Yeah, she was the loving one. The other one was a very cold person, I always felt.
Yeah,
and interesting. But her husband, the widow man that she married, would always accept me. He was always lovely to me. But
so you had your actual mother was cold, her partner was warm, and then your adopted mother was warm.
Bury that. But then it comes to my father. My father was a married man with a grown-up family when he had the affair with my mother, and they ran away together. And his grown-up children of about 16, 17, the older ones, with their mother, would walk the streets of Nelson looking for him because they knew he was womanising. And apparently a couple of women went to Wellington and dragged him back. In the process, I arrived, and I was born, and the wife had a baby at the same time, but the baby died. And then when I was a year old, from hearing things, my father died of an illness. And so I didn't know anything about anybody for many, many years, and probably in the last 20 years, or perhaps a little bit more, I managed, with Mum's help, to find my father's brother, who lived in Nelson, and found out that my grandfather came out from Scotland with 10 children and ended up down basically in Sedinville, where Jim came from, and they all were perhaps miners and things like that. So I only knew my real father's brother, who was a lovely, lovely, fine gentleman. And so I had never wanted to make contact with siblings because I did not want to upset anybody. I thought this could upset families, and I was very aware of that. And I said to my, would it be my uncle? Wouldn't it? Uncle? Yeah. And I said to him, does anyone know about me? And he said, I'm the only one. And he said at the time, this is so strange, because he said, I was only recently thinking, whatever happened to that child? And he says, and then you appear. And I said, have I got siblings? And he said, yes, you have. And so he got me to make contact with a brother that also lived in Nelson. And he accepted me and was actually very nice, but could never tell his children. This would mortify his children, which I find strange in this day and age, everyone's different. The strangest thing out of all this, there was about five siblings. Yeah. One or two came to see me, one from Australia, another one came to see me. The one that is so strange is, our kids were little when they went to school, and our daughter Carmen had a little friend called Michelle, and they both went off to school together, and we ended up knowing her parents, which were in Nelson. She was my half-sister and never knew it. And when she heard about it, she was absolutely mortified because she had been one of the older ones that had gone looking for her father, so would have nothing to do with me, absolutely nothing. So, so I never ever saw her again. But but all
you'd think you'd go the other way, wouldn't you? You'd think she'd be pleased that there was so much.
Well, yeah, we're all different, aren't we? I always say we're such a funny lot, but all of them would be dead now.
Yeah,
because they were that much older than me.
So what about issues of stigma, Rona? There was nothing like that, say, for you going to school, saying that you weren't living with your actual parents. Oh, there was no issue there, or was it?
I can't ever recall anything.
Yeah.
You know, no, I can't ever recall anything like that. So,
No.
And I think kids accept things, don't
they? Yeah, they just treat it as normal. Yeah,
so, So that's
So that, do you think that was significant for you, though? That?
Oh, I think it always has been underneath. Yes, yeah. If I get upset or I get, say, rejected, I'll be that little girl. I immediately go back to being that little girl.
Yeah.
Strange.
So you really felt it was a rejection by your mother?
Yes, because just because she was marrying a man with three other children, I mean, what's another child?
Yeah, it could
child?
Be a blended family.
And he obviously accepted me.
George would have accepted
him. He was lovely, wasn't he? He was lovely.
He was an old fisherman.
Yeah.
Made his own brew.
Mm.
I think he drank it too. Not sure about on
fishing.
Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah.
It's a rough... Yeah,
but no, I think I perhaps feel, talking about it now, I probably feel a bit sad that my mother's children, because I mean I was brought up with them being as my cousin, and they all knew who I was because they talked about me as being Betty's child. I think I feel perhaps that I would have liked to have had contact with them. Because it's just me, you know? And it would have been nice to have had them. But I have to understand they have their own lives. So that's it. You just have to get on and make the best of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and maybe it made you think more about doing voluntary work. Yeah, well, what was it that motivated both of you, I suppose, into voluntary work?
Well, I don't know. The big thing... Oh, well, also, you see, we did a lot for AFS because we were on the committee then and did things with them, and we had other exchange students.
Yeah, American Field Service.
Yes,
so,
So
that was bringing people... So you had exchange students coming in.
And stay with us, yes. We had a boy from Jamaica and... and Thailand, and
What was her name?
From Thailand. We had.
I know the one thing that she liked was we used to make passion fruit ice blocks, and that's all. She absolutely
loved
she,
the,
she would drink the whole flavour. That was the one thing I remember about it.
I can't remember what her name was.
Ping.
Yeah, well, they called it Ping, but I can't think. Can't think. But that was interesting in itself, that having exchange students, because they offered this amazing trip to Thailand, living with families for parents who had exchange students. So we had a family in Bangkok, a family in Chiang Mai, and a family in Surin, and... The family in Bangkok, and I'm going back a long way, one of the boys, he was just lovely. We loved him.
Well, when you said you had three, so you had three children from those different...
No, you had
one from there, and so they allowed you to go back
What happened was AFS offered adults a trip over there to stay with families.
To do a cultural exchange.
So we this was afterwards or before?
Yeah, 1990 was.
Before we had any children from Thailand.
Yes.
Because I was
getting to that. So you can understand where they're coming from.
Just to have a cultural exchange.
Yeah, it was a coincidence that happened to be Thailand.
Yeah.
It could have been anywhere.
So AFS offers adults or is it potential host families?
They only did it the once.
Okay.
I think it was a bigger headache than they planned.
Mm. So yeah. They thought because...
And we had 4 weeks over there. We had three different families. And
I think it was like a thank you for people who took on a child for a year. Because these days you all get paid for doing these exchange students. This was totally different. You never got paid for it. You had them for the year.
And you provided all the food and everything.
There was no money exchanged at all. So the first family was Bangkok, and that was an amazing family. To this day, we still have contact with To, who speaks English. Still, he's the son, and never been married. Still, is always emailing us. We were invited to the kids' weddings, so we attended their kids' weddings.
Wow!
The Sarin family, we didn't have so much contact with. They got their daughter, who was a criminologist from another part of Thailand, to come to the home while we were there so she could speak English to us, because they couldn't. The family in Chiang Mai were an amazing young family with two little children. Years later, they contacted us, would we have their daughter, this is when we're in the motel, for a year to go to Freiburg school. So we had her, she was a Patria. We had a Patria and a Patricia. Oh, goodness me, all these Pats. Yeah. And my sister was Pat too. And we had her for a year while she went to Freiburg school.
That was nothing to do with AFS.
That was nothing to do with AFS. Okay. We did that, it was a private arrangement.
Okay, yep.
So doing these things makes the world go round. It's quite amazing because you these contacts that you always keep having.
So what did you think the... I find cross-cultural stuff is fascinating and I find it enriching, but did you find there were difficulties with it?
We were given a little handbook of the do's and don'ts in Thailand, and one thing was we were never allowed to sleep together. One was upstairs and one was downstairs in case I conceived a child while I was under their roof. That was a no-no. You never, never washed male and female underwear together, and you certainly never hung it on the line together. And you never sat with your feet like this. Feet must always be tucked away because they were the lower part of your body. Funny little thing, okay. But I love those things. I love those things that's what makes us different.
Yes.
But the three families were incredible. They could not do enough for you. Could not do enough for you. And when we've gone back to Porn, that was Mum's name, and Dad's now dead. Dad loved his whiskey, but what an amazing family. Oh, my God, they were just awesome, awesome. Couldn't do enough for you. And I remember going to the Klong. The Klong's a river going through Bangkok, where everyone's bathing and showering and doing everything, and the dogs are swimming at it, and everything's happening. And she takes us. She was a school teacher. She took us down there for lunch, and the guy put the water to cook the food in out of the Klong, and it was liver. Well, liver to Jim and I is just yuck. Well, I think she could read your body language just like that. The next thing, it was whipped out of our hands. Come on, we're going somewhere else. She could just pick it like that, you know? Because we were very reluctant. Because as it is, I got exceptionally ill over there.
Yeah.
And most of us, except
Jim. You get exceptionally ill everywhere
I do,
we go.
I do.
So it doesn't matter where we go.
I always got something. Yeah. But he never did, which was surprising, but most of us ended up in a Thai hospital with diarrhea. Oh, gosh, were we all. Yeah. And their saying was, when I said, look, I can't do something because I would have spent all night on the toilet, And they'd say, my pen rye, that was never mind. Just come on, go on, you still got to do it.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're over here, make the most of it.
So, yeah.
I always did think, actually, with the, you know, you go to various other countries and you get these stomach bugs, and instead of having all this bottled water that's supposed to be very pure, wouldn't it be better to have the bottled water with all the bugs in so you can maintain the immunity?
I eventually got on to taking your, before I went, what are those special pills that just... put all the good and bad what's-her-names in your stomach before you
probiotics.
Yeah, probiotics. And somebody got me onto that, and then I was fine.
Oh,
I was fine.
Very
because,
good.
And because I copped it. In Brazil, I was bad too, really bad.
Well, there's an Indian professor colleague of mine. He said growing up in India, he could just drink the water, no problem. But if he goes back now, it's
absolutely. Gosh.
Now, you did mention, we've got a few minutes, you did mention the motels. You were running a motel for a while.
We had a motel opposite the hospital in Palmerston. One thing I say, the health system may not be the greatest in New Zealand, but I think we did all right out of it. But, there was only the two of us along there in those days, wasn't there? In that. So we had it for 5 years, and...
You could write a book on that, couldn't you?
You could write a book on that if you wanted to.
Especially on the people that came.
You know, one of the things, as Joy said, in those days you started at 6 in the morning and you went till 10, 11 o'clock at night.
So it was just the two of you running the motel?
Yeah.
Two motels.
We only had the one motel. We had cleaners come in during the day and that. But... because you know it's not like the motels today where they close at 7 or 8 o'clock at night or open at 9 o'clock in the morning and
you handed your key and then off you go.
In those days you had to
looked after them,
you know. You could have somebody, and we were fairly fortunate. We had we got involved with some trucking companies and they'd come and stay, but they'd come in at all hours of the night. So they'd ring in and say, oh, I'll be in at such and such. So we used to leave the key
through
the cat door, and they'd put their hand through and get the key of whatever room, and then when they woke up, they'd want a cooked meal or something like that. But, it was...
We did massive breakfasts.
Yeah.
Which...
Mm. We used to have
be busy.
Track people and that. But we got involved with... tied up with Manfield, so we used to get a lot of the car racing people... And that.
Oh. So tell them the story of putting the hand through the cat door, though.
Oh, yeah, we had a married gentleman, truck driver, and it was him that got started with the other truckies.
He was lovely.
He was a big guy. He was a big guy. And anyway, you used to always say to them when they got up in the morning or whenever they woke up, you have a good night. What time do you get in? I said, that's the time to have a good night's sleep. Yeah, all right, okay, that's fine. So I said to him, I can't think of his name. Came in the morning, I said something to him, and he says, didn't you hear me come in the night? Because sometimes you might leave two or three keys there for the different truckies. And I said, no, don't hear you come in. He says, well, I put my hand through the door and the cat was sitting on the keys. And he said, have you ever seen a bloody white Mary? Because he said, I went straight up in there. I said, shit, he was just looking after the keys. He said, I went right up in the air. He said, put your hand in the dark. There was an outside light there, but it would have been semi-dark, and he put his hand through the cat door. He'd probably done it a dozen times before him, but he kept sitting on top of the keys.
We had some amazing, you know, especially the Irishmen that came and,
Where would they park their trucks?
Sometimes they'd bring the cab, but usually what they would do would be they'd drive down so far, then another driver would take it on to Wellington, and then they'd come back again. We had one driver, they were supposed to be off the road for so many hours, but we knew damn well he'd book in, he'd go into his room the next morning, you knew damn well he never slept there.
Yeah.
You know, they just... He had the paperwork, he booked in, he stayed the night. officially. He's there, isn't he? But he used to bring his wife quite often too, didn't
he? We had a lot of cancer people and a lot from the mental health unit. So you actually spent a lot of time with them, actually, because they wanted to talk, either talk to you, or on many occasions, I can remember one little lass from the mental health unit, she would just really cry, so you would hug her, which you're not allowed to do these days.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't get that, because I would just hug them and say, come on. And I remember we had an alarm for if we were out in the house part, and say Jim was sitting in the front, and this particular time I could hear this guy was threatening you.
Oh, that's right, I forgot about that.
And I thought, oh my goodness, what's happening there? And then I must have picked the vibes and thought, something's happening. So I opened the door, because I could hear what was going on.
No, he came around from behind him.
Yeah, from behind him. And I said, come here to me. And he just burst into my arms and cried and cried and cried. And it was either Christmas or something to do with Christmas. And he was as drunk as a lord, wasn't he?
Yeah, young fella.
But he slobbered all over me. And anyway, then I called him down. I says, no, come on, just pull yourself together and go. Hours later, he came back and thanked us.
Yeah. So they weren't people staying in the motel. No, they were just coming in.
We had a kiddies, what do you call it, where you have a baby thing where you can hear them talking in their room.
A baby monitor.
That
was something, people would come into the office and we could hear them talking, which was quite good, you know. It wasn't an alarm that set off on a buzzer, and so it was often amusing to hear what they were saying about the motel or something like that.
But it was also a warning from just listening to what's going on, you know.
But, it was a different... it was a different life, but...
I would never do it again.
Yeah, it stopped you doing the voluntary work.
Doing the voluntary work.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.